All right, so welcome to another episode of PDF Screenplays Podcast. We're going to start off tonight with the Aaron Sorkin penned and David Fincher directed The Social Network, which I suppose is a biography of the Facebook creator, his name being...
Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah. Mark Zuckerberg. So Jesse Eisenberg's going to be playing Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, which is an interesting choice. We should probably introduce ourselves.
Hold on.
Before we get too carried away.
Introduce ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
I wouldn't say so if it was just me and you, but since we do have a guest, don't we? Yeah.
Okay, well, you can introduce him because I need to read my notes on The Social Network.
That was Adam, and this is JC, and we have Jawbreaker on the forum visiting us. We're going to call him David because Jawbreaker is just silly.
Did you just call his name?
It really is.
See?
You chose it.
Yeah, he agrees. Yeah, I can change that for you.
It was just spur of the moment.
All right, that's fair. So we are going to speak, as I've already mentioned, about The Social Network. That was a big script when it dropped back in July.
It was huge, yeah.
That was kind of a coup when we got that one.
Yeah.
Really?
It was really.
It seems
huge.
Like there's bigger scripts out there.
I'm sure there are now, but I mean, at the time, this was pretty big.
And I was very. I mean, as soon as it hit, I read it that first day. I don't know. Maybe I really love Facebook, and I just have to read it. Mostly, I was a big Aaron Sorkin fan. I own
from West Wing.
From West Wing.
Yeah.
I own all the seasons of West Wing, and I like the film American President, which is kind of where you can see where the West Wing came from that film. And I just really enjoy how the pacing of Aaron Sorkin. A lot of people give him shit for his pacing, but I really enjoy it. When was the last time you read Social Network?
I just read it.
Okay, I read it in July, and I haven't read it since. So if you want to go ahead and give it a quick once-over and then tell us what you think, and then I'll do a little bit, and we'll just go from there, and we can get David involved and just kind of ride that train, see where it takes us.
It's really not hard to explain. It's basically just about how Facebook started, the little deals and everything that were brokered between it, and how those happened, how those occurred, and I guess the falling out. Which a lot of people don't know about is that, you know, there's more than one person behind Facebook when it started, and that it was actually a stolen idea, just like most things. I mean, it's really comparable to Microsoft and Apple. I mean, if you think about it.
Did you ever see, it was a TV movie. It was called The Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
You saw that?
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of that in a way.
Yeah.
I guess it's, you know, technology and it's kind of looking back. Even though this one obviously is set up differently, it's told in flashback, which I can't remember if that TV movie was or not, but the way Sorkin uses flashback in this to tell the story through two individual depositions, two lawsuits that Zuckerberg's going through, is pretty original. I think when I first was going to read this screenplay, I thought it's a little early because I think the story of Mark Zuckerberg is far from over, and he's so young, and anything that happens, if something big was to happen in the next couple of years with Mark Zuckerberg, this film is going to feel a little shortchanged. It's going to very, very temporary because so much can happen with him in the time between, but the time it's written and time it's shown, that we might end up watching this going, but we all know what happened afterward whenever he, you know, whatever.
That's very true, but at the same time, Facebook might never be as popular as it is right now.
That is the gamble they're taking. I mean, they're either striking or the iron is hot, or they've told the story too early. Or there'll be some sort of middle ground where it's going to come out.
You know, I don't think there's any lack of story here. I mean, really. There's obviously more to it, and there's going to be way more to it since he's so young. But you got to realize the main thing about this is the deposition.
Two depositions.
And those have both been finalized, and that's
essentially the story is about those depositions and the lawsuits that surround those depositions, and his biography is told through the testimony of those depositions. And I suppose in that way, it is a self-contained film, but it just does feel a little small to me. But the way Aaron Sorkin writes it and the pacing makes it very, very good. So
What do you think, David? Do you think it's too soon?
I was just listening to you guys. It seems like there's a downfall arc with this guy. He rises to becoming a billionaire, but, you know, that's not really...
Exactly.
Yeah, it's all about his friends the people around him.
Yep.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what he's trying to drive home there at the end with, you know, where he's talking about how he's completely alone.
Yeah.
You know, after all this, he created this for friends, and now at the end, he's trying to get that one friend, the girlfriend back, and he's just, well, I don't want to give up the exact same. I don't want to give up the line at the end.
Yeah.
But, and that's, you know, apparently that's what the Aaron Sorkin was trying to tell in this individual story. I'm just saying, it does not feel... Like we watch biographies of people and they're epic. They span years.
Yeah.
But this feels
I mean, basically.
I know
it's 160 pages of
Yeah.
I mean, it really goes into detail for a short time in someone's life. Whereas you know, you get those biographies of those, you know, the music guys, and it's 120 pages and it covers 60 years.
Yeah.
So,
but really, what's left for this guy? He became like the youngest billionaire, right?
I think you're right. I know that he's there, but that's the thing. He is so young. You know, what could he do next? And will this film seem lesser because of what he does in the future and maybe in the near future? And I know no one can tell and predict the future. And I know you just got to do with what you can, but it does seem a little premature, but short of that, as technically written, as what it's probably going to look like with David Fincher, it's going to be a good film, and that's what it boils down to. Is it entertainment? Is it good entertainment? It is. And you and David, you were saying you want to talk a little about David Fincher as the director, which I think is an interesting choice. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, no, I was just saying how Trigger Street lucked into that. They got Aaron Sorkin to write the thing. They got David Fincher to hop on, and then they made a gutsy move with Eisenberg to... play the lead, Mark.
That's the riskiest move. That is Jesse Eisenberg.
You think so?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think
just because I don't think he's proven himself as a leading man yet.
What?
He's been in plenty of roles, but look at how Adventureland underperformed.
Yeah, that but look how Zombieland performed.
But that wasn't really him, though.
That was
having seen the film. It really, the best thing about that.
Is it Woody Harrelson all the way?
Yeah, Woody Harrelson.
It's definitely like more of a buddy, is the way I look, you know, from what I've seen about it.
This is just my own opinion, but when I read Jesse Eisenberg, I'm thinking a studio meeting. They're like, Mark Zuckerberg, who's a good Jew that could open up a film?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah.
And you know that's how that meeting went.
Yeah. Well, Larry David's too old.
Yeah, so. Larry David's too old. And those are the only two Jews that could open a film other than Woody Allen. He only does his own stuff.
Yeah.
But
that's a really good opening, though. If they can, that's what makes me question Eisenberg, because I just don't. He's never delivered something like this before.
He's never been a straight up dick in a film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is that the character's not written as a total dick.
Yeah, he
he's
is.
Just one of I don't think he is. I think he's just way more involved with the Facebook than he is with the rest of his life, and that's why he has no friends.
But you see, Eisenberg is so self-deprecating, and he is Michael Cera's.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so it is going to be kind of different. And here we go. Sean Parker is going to be Justin Timberlake.
Which, that's fine with me.
Is that the role he's getting?
Yeah, Justin Timberlake will play Sean Parker.
Yeah.
Oh, that's another weird choice. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
I don't know what Sean Parker looks like at all, but...
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
He's a skinny geek like the other kid.
Yeah, well, Justin Timberlake,
it's like all of us.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be pretty interesting. Now... Because this is in pre-production right now, so...
Yeah, it is. It's
shooting. So it's shooting right now. Okay.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Shooting this fall, which we are currently in fall.
Oh, that's
in
quick.
Boston and LA. So, oh, yeah.
But see, here's the other thing about Eisenberg is that even in this, even though he's the creator of Facebook, there's so much in the screenplay that has nothing to do with Zuckerberg and takes place with the two...
The twins?
The twins. I mean, that's a huge chunk of the screenplay, too.
That's probably going to be cut.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. That was the first thing I was thinking about when I finished the screenplay. I was like, that's going to be cut, because there's no way they're going to film this 160 pages.
I agree, and I think they're going to gloss over that whole kind of storyline between the twins and their father. I think that's going to be glossed over.
Yeah, I was not even interested in that stuff anyway, so...
Really?
Yeah, it did not bother me if that will go.
Here's what I'm afraid is going to happen. Here's what I'm afraid to happen. They're going to make those two... The twins and the lady, the girl that was creating that website with the twins,
yeah,
they're going to make them the enemy in this film.
Well, yeah.
And if they, but Sorkin goes out of his way to humanize all of those people.
Mm-hmm.
They give those twins motivation.
Yeah.
Whereas if David's correct in his presumption, that's all going to get cut out. It's going to make those guys like the archetype of the Harvard. They weren't sailing; they were rowing champions. They're just going to be so cardboard if they cut out that stuff showing how they really, you know, put thought into things. They weren't flat characters in the least, in my opinion. But I mean,
Sorkin did kind of paint them as dicks, though.
I was going to say he paints everyone in the screenplay a dick except Eduardo. To me,
and the chick, what's her name? The girlfriend Mark's after.
Yeah. I mean, that's. I mean, her role is so minor that it doesn't even matter. I mean, Eduardo's is major, and he's not a dick. But everyone else, to me, is painted as a dick. I mean, Sean Barker's obviously a dick.
Yeah, I was surprised at that. That was funny stuff. I'm sorry.
Which, I mean...
I'm not going to spoil it, but yeah. There's just lots of good stuff with him. If Justin Timberlake can pull it off, he'll be on his way up.
Can I just say, I really enjoy Justin Timberlake's acting, at least on Saturday Night Live. He's really good.
He's not bad.
I think that's what they're hoping. I was watching Trigger Street, and they seemed to like that bit too a lot. So that may have been what motivated them to this.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty decent casting.
What was I going to say?
I have no idea.
Oh, I know. After you read the script, David, did you go on like Wikipedia and read all about Facebook? Just to see how accurate it was?
Not really.
Really?
The only reason why I read it really was for this.
Oh, okay.
I just had no interest in this at all.
Really? Are you on Facebook?
No. I do not use Facebook or MySpace or those things.
For some reason, I
never got into that stuff.
Okay.
Well, cool.
But, yeah, I immediately read his Wikipedia page.
That's exactly what I did. I was like, there's no way this happened. I went and read everything. And it
happened perfectly.
The only thing that I noticed was not in the script that I read on Wikipedia was that Sean Parker was actually promoted as president of Facebook for a few months in there. And I assume that's when he was making the decisions in the screenplays. It's just it never says in the screenplay that he was the president.
I don't particularly remember that. But it's been so long.
Like I said, it's on the Wikipedia. And in the screenplay, it kind of paints it like that because it seems like he actually does take
kind of charge. Once they moved out west, he was definitely in charge.
Yeah.
So, we can speak a little about Aaron Sorkin. He had his ups and downs. I know that his show, Studio 60, didn't last nearly as long as The West Wing, and I think that had a lot to do with how intensely he writes dialogue for his characters, and his characters all, there seems to be a common theme, and I think I read this a few months ago about Aaron Sorkin. The common theme in Aaron Sorkin's characters is they're all very committed to their work, like desperately, like they're very professional, and then you can get away with something like that on a show like The West Wing because you would expect people who work for the president to do so. And it became kind of ridiculous on a show like Studio 60. But here we are again on The Social Network, where we have our main character who is obsessed with his work. And it just seems to be a common theme with him. But from that comes great drama and obstacles constantly. So you're never really bored when it comes to that middle of the second act, where a lot of films tend to kind of dry out, where there's always something going on. And his ability to set up screenplays and his ability to be a showrunner, like on The West Wing, he is a professional, and he's doing something that isn't cookie cutter as composed to, you know, like the A to B to C. He does it really well. And the characters he draws, they're very good hooks in themselves. He really brings out good personalities. That being said, you mentioned the Eduardo character.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he is too sympathetic to the Eduardo character.
Who is?
I think Aaron Sorkin's portrayal of him. I believe that he may have not taken it nearly. Like, he's the only character, really, that does not take his work, quote-unquote, as seriously or perceived as taking it as seriously as the Mark character, and therefore he's the one who gets punished at the end.
Yeah, but how do you know that's not how it went down?
You don't, but this isn't really about that. This is about your characters and how you treat them. At the end, Mark realizes he has to be a person outside work, but he is still rewarded. He is still a billionaire. Eduardo does get a settlement, but in the end, he is the loser, and he's the one who did not take his work as seriously or is perceived as such. And I think that's a theme with Eric and Sorkin. And I don't know. I believe it helps build characters, but I think it does the character of Eduardo a disservice in this situation.
I just, speaking of Eduardo, I just read an article last week where a guy who was an investor in New York,
mm-hmm.
and whenever Facebook was first starting up, him and Mark both went and met with this man. I don't remember his name, but he posted this blog. And he talks about how he basically just characterizes them both in the article. And he explains Eduardo exactly as Eduardo is portrayed in the script. Like, you know, shy, quiet.
Mm-hmm.
The first meeting they had, Eduardo was the one, and he was talking more business. Mark seemed confident, but at the same time, he seemed kind of reserved with everything. And then by the time they met more, Mark was the one taking charge, and Eduardo just kind of sat back.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately, his company did not invest in anything, but he has no idea what happened to Eduardo. And the whole article was about how he really just wants to know what happened to Eduardo, because nobody knows. After that lawsuit, no one knows. And, you know, there's a bunch of comments on there, people talking. Some people say he's in New York. Some people say he's on a beach somewhere.
So Eduardo has become the Howard Hughes of the Social Network cast.
Yeah, exactly. He's the Bobby Fischer.
Man, you guys went deep with that. I didn't consider any of that. Not at all. I just thought he was not good at his job. That's what it seemed like. Mark was impatient, and he just wanted to get this thing off the ground. And he knew what he wanted to do, and he was smart with what he wanted, and his friend just kept fighting him on it.
And I think that
so he kicked him to the curb.
Yeah, and I think that's what Aaron Sorkin wants you to be able to see through Mark's eyes, and that's why Mark makes the decisions or allows Sean to make the decisions for him. But the whole time I was reading this screenplay, I'm thinking, this is being totally unfair to Eduardo. I know it couldn't have gone down like this. And maybe it totally did. But it gave me that thought. And it just planted that seed as I read that screenplay. And then when I read that article about how Aaron Sorkin writes characters, it just jumped up. It's like, yes, this is exactly how I felt. So, I mean, sorry to get... I don't want to go so deep into
it. No, that's fine. It's just, I just never really thought of it.
No, it's all right. It's okay. It's just, everyone's going to read it and get something else out of it. A good screenplay will do that. And let's all agree right now, it is a good screenplay. And if you're looking to be able to learn, there are a lot of screenplays we read that don't do it if you're looking to learn. This is a good one to a learning tool.
Yeah.
Don't try it right out of the gate, because you will fail miserably at the way this is set up.
Yeah.
But read it.
Aaron Sorkin has a knack for making me care about dicks, characters.
It's very true.
I think it has a lot to do with the fact that Aaron Sorkin knows that he himself is probably a pretentious asshole, and he's A-okay with it.
I don't know, but like with Charlie Wilson's War, this guy, Charlie Wilson, was not a good guy. I mean, he was sleeping around with chicks, and he was, you know, not doing very congressman-like things,
yeah.
Although what congressman is, but still. But it's just, you know, he made you care about him, and he makes you care about this guy's mission. And Mark, I was on board with this guy for some reason. I never hated him once throughout this. Even when he kicked his best friend to the side, I was like, yeah, I'd be tired of it too. He's over in New York just trying to get ads from like Harvard or whatever.
Yeah,
here is Sean over here who is getting them meetings with bigger companies.
And you're right. And now that you're like describing that to me, I'm trying to picture Jesse Eisenberg pull that off, and I'm having a hard time doing it. So if he can do that, like that scene where he kicks out his friend, where he's showing anger and where he's really taking over the moment, where he is like he owns Eduardo. Is Jesse Eisenberg really owned anybody in any film he's done?
I don't think so.
Now, this is where I give David Fincher his leeway, because if anybody can pull it out of somebody, it's David Fincher.
And I agree. And I also think that Jesse Eisenberg is probably capable of it. I just haven't seen it yet, so it makes it very interesting to be able to look forward to. And I'm definitely going to watch it.
I'm really surprised they didn't try to cast somebody bigger named for the thing. Are they just hoping it's just going to sell off Social Network itself?
Yeah, I think
it's... Because I really don't.
And you know what? I wonder if... Well, I don't know if they would change the name of the screenplay. Do you think they would change it?
I think
to try
it'll
to make
come
money?
Out with the name of Social Network, honestly.
Obviously the title works on two levels right now as it is. I mean, obviously it's about Facebook, but it's also about literally the social network of the people around you, which is great and a great title. But if Jesse Eisenberg is going to be opening it, either one of two things are going to have to happen. Jesse Eisenberg is going to have to get a lot more popular, which he might, because I like Jesse Eisenberg, and something, you know, he might be able to open a movie, or it's going to have to open on just, well, look, it's David Fincher, Aaron Sorkin. I mean, and oh, look, there's...
Well, that works for us. That doesn't really work for, you know, into the theater.
Well, I tell you what, you get, oh, this is about Facebook. Oh my God, there's Justin Timberlake all over this trailer we're watching.
But there's not really much fun going on in this story. This is actually kind of a depressing story.
Yeah,
like I said, it's a downfall.
And you know what? You're absolutely right. But by the time that the audience figures that out, everyone's already paid their $8.
Yes, you may be right. But I was just having a hard time picturing them cutting a trailer from this. You know, how are they going to show anything fun?
it's really going to be tough. And if you look at trailers for Charlie Wilson's War, the trailers aren't that great. I mean,
well, Charlie Wilson did not open huge.
No,
it actually did not make as much
money.
And
that had Tom Hanks.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's the man. He is the number one opener ever.
Yeah.
Along with Philip Seymour Hoffman. Yeah, he was in it too.
Yeah, I mean, it had a great cast, and it's a great movie. I watched it like 2 weeks ago.
And
it's very fun.
I was there.
Like you said, it has that Sorkin dialogue that just crackles. You know,
And that's what this has too, but it's just the same thing. It's going to be tough to cut a trailer. And at the same time, I mean, I think this is really what they're hoping for, is that with as popular as Facebook is now, they can cut a trailer and just give little hints of how, you know, this is how the thing that you use every day and you use to connect your life, this is how it started.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an idea that's going to sell it, the premise.
And I mean, I'm sure there's going to be ads plastered all over Facebook. And
yeah, but does Mark Zuckerberg approve of this? I mean, obviously, I guess if they're using his name and everything. But
you know, I would assume, because whenever you actually try and find information about this online, it's really vague and it's kind of hard to find. That's just like, you know, Eduardo, the whole article about where's Eduardo. I mean, it's not like they go out and, you know, publicize themselves and everything.
Well, they based the whole story off Ben Mezrich's book.
What's his book? I didn't know.
It's called The Social Network, I think. I think it's the same name.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Thanks for bringing that up 30 minutes in. Really?
Yeah, it really is. That's what, if you go to Trigger Street, they have it all over their site, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I feel like an idiot.
Why would this guy want people to see how much of a douchebag he was?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think, well, you know,
because he's a billionaire.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think your answer falls in the screenplay where he's like, I don't care. I have more money. I could buy and sell everyone in this room.
Yeah.
I don't care. So,
he did have that one kind of redeeming moment in the end, but I don't know how much
I think
people are
going to buy
into that.
More for the audience to be able to leave the theater and think, oh, everyone learned a lesson, more than what really happened in reality.
Yeah,
because
sure
reality is not like that. Dicks are dicks, and when they go to sleep, they're still a dick.
I was gonna say, I'm sure he didn't add that girl and sit and wait on her. If he added her, it was strictly to send her a message saying, "Hey, I'm a billionaire. You want my dick again?"
I would probably think.
Yeah, I'm sure she's just waiting for his reply now that he's a billionaire.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, if you're a douchebag, you can be a millionaire. If you have a 16,000 IQ, and
if you're a prick,
yeah,
that's what it seems to be. I mean, they made a great. I mean, they brought the Napster guy, Sean. What was his name?
Sean Fanning.
Sean Parker.
And then they had that Bill Gates reference in there. I was like, you know, it's just.
Now, did that really happen? Do you think when he went
with
to that
Steve Jobs?
Whenever
no, when he saw the speech. Given by Bill Gates.
Oh, I have no idea.
I bet it did. You can't make that up and get away with that, could you?
I don't.
Yeah, you probably could.
I think you could. Because in the screenplay, it says it never shows the actual guy.
No.
It's just him speaking in the background.
Yeah.
Okay.
While they're flirting with two Asian chicks, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
I won't forget that part.
Yeah, the important part.
The important part. Was there other parts?
But, I mean, here's the major plot hole, okay? This guy owns Facebook, knows everything about it. He's adding this girl. Why is he adding her?
Yeah,
he,
just one day.
He can hack into her profile and look at everything he wants.
That's true.
Come on. He can get her email.
That is a bit, I thought of that, too.
All right.
Yeah, well, I think we're about there to wrap up. Do you have any finishing thoughts?
Or anything that we just missed?
Not really. Other than Aaron Sorkin's awesome.
Did you enjoy it? Did you enjoy the screenplay? What would you give it on, like, a 1 to 10, like we normally do?
I would give it a 9. I really would. Because, like I said, he made me care about this really not a great person.
In a technical writing standpoint, a 9, I would say, is warranted. The story, like I said, it seems pretty limited, so I'd give it more of a 7 or so, but... Overall, it's a really, really good screenplay. And like I said before, if someone wants to learn how to write, this is a valuable tool in which to teach them a certain style of storytelling.
Yeah. It's very specific in the way that he tells the story. I definitely would not recommend, you know, a first-time writer coming out trying to tell a story this way. It's interesting. It doesn't follow any type of screenplay formatting whatsoever. So obviously I'm not going to tell a first-time writer to read the screenplay and learn from it. I mean, you can learn plenty of things from it, but at the same time, I would not recommend a first-time, you know, reader writer checking this one out, besides caring about characters like Aaron Sorkin
does. Character, the way to draw characters is very good.
Well, I was given it a 9 based on just the writing. I mean, it's so simplistic.
And I agree.
I mean,
the
don't
writing
even have
so well. Yeah, it's done very well. So, and I got to understand that. JC, what would you give it?
I would give it a 9 as well.
Oh, wow. So we got 9s and me coming in with a 7. So,
Killjoy.
Dave, thank you very much for joining us.
No problem. It was good.
We'll have you back at some point. Well, I'm glad you liked it, man. So that was The Social Network by Aaron Sorkin and going to be directed by David Fincher, coming out probably sometime next year. Jesse Eisenberg and Justin Timberlake. So we'll see how that goes. Thanks a lot for joining us.
The second script we have tonight is Out of This World by Alan Loeb. And just to give a little background or plot of it, because I have actually no idea what's going on with the production of the script, but it's essentially about team that's going to land on Mars, and then on the way there, the female who is on board finds out she's pregnant, and then the script kind of fast forwards to where the kid's a teenager, and that's where the actual story takes off, with this kid coming back to Earth and meeting a girl that he had met online while he was on Mars. So obviously it takes place in the future. And honestly, I have no idea what production is scheduled for this or anything. I know that Alan Loeb wrote it for Richard Lewis. Don't know which Richard Lewis. There's so many on IMDb, and they all have producing credits, so I'm not sure. But I guess let's get everyone's thoughts first. I enjoyed it. It definitely has drama and comedy in it, and the ending's kind of, it's very Alan Loeb, I guess I could say, since I've read enough of him now, and that it seems so pitch perfect, and the perfect coming together of everything.
You see, I think that it is the least Alan Loeb-like script that he's written, but not being quality-wise, not in terms of quality. I think it's, you know, it's a decent script, but there's so much more action compared to some of his, and that's inevitable. I mean, we're talking about space travel, and mm-hmm. also kind of a, it's got a lot of action beats as opposed, you know, to like the Baster or Only Living Boy in New York yeah. and all that. But
I was just meaning the ending, the way it all comes.
Oh yeah, the story, the craft, the yeah. way. I mean, it's very tight. So I'm sorry to interrupt, but go right ahead.
It's all right, and like I was saying, it's definitely an Alan Loeb script. It's as far as being able to read it, you can read right through it, no problem. Characters are mostly believable and keep you engaged in the story. I started and I didn't want to finish reading it. How'd you feel about it, David?
The ending is like one of the worst parts for me.
Yeah.
It convoluted, I guess would be the right word for it. Just too much going on, too many things unbelievable, like Root Beer being abducted in the end by that guy.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he was necessarily, or if Root Beer was necessarily adopted as by the, you talk about, I mean, I don't give too much away about, but the Leo character, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that maybe
they just kind of went for a ride, like to have like a little, I don't know if they were, I don't know if Leo necessarily adopted her or not. That's not what I got out of it. But,
I didn't either.
Okay.
Oh, but, that's weird.
But your point is that it is, it, everything gets tied up very, very nicely,
and
that's very true, and it's very indicative of an Alan Loeb script.
Yes,
that's my one. One of my major concerns with Only Living Boy in New York is how everything got tied up so tightly. It's okay to have a couple loose ends and things just happen to happen, and with this one, you know, with everybody at the end having a perfect place. And everybody knowing everyone and everybody coming together, it seems a little cheesy. But, and this, you know, thinking about it, this is essentially a children's film. And
yes.
you kind of need that for that kind of audience. But I can still definitely feel your frustration because I had it.
I don't think so. I think the ending would have been fun had they stayed in the spacecraft when they're like floating in zero G. Whatever, yeah. You know, when the plane's going down.
Oh, to keep him alive? Where,
yeah.
That, if, just like in there?
Yeah, yeah, like just, they could have freeze-framed on all that, because they're all happy. They're all safe, they're all happy. Like, him going back to Mars is kind of a downer.
Yeah.
Okay, I can understand that. Because really that scene where he's back in Mars and Leo comes and gets Root Beer is very much a kind of an epilogue. It doesn't really flow with the narrative. It's very much an attachable ending. So I can see what you're saying there.
And them being kids is kind of another problem I had. Like her being able to fly a plane at 15.
Well, I think, I mean, the writer did go out of his way to show that, you know, her stepdad or whatever was a crop duster. But I understand what you're saying. I think, you know, in his way of you know, making a kid's film. It didn't really occur until I was almost done that I was reading a kid's film.
Yeah.
It's just Alan Loeb. And I don't know if that says something to the quality of the writing or just me not paying attention. But I was reading a kid's movie. So sometimes, I mean, the kid's the only living Martian. I think the fact that a 15-year-old can fly, I think we just got to buy that if we're going to buy everything else. But I can see what you're saying.
It just it was weird for me. And then how she was, I just don't like Root Beer's character all that much at all, really. Just didn't work for me at all. I mean, she's like the same stereotypical person with the, you know, purple streaks in her hair starting out, and then she's in the supermarket and she's all of a sudden beautiful to him, you know? Just
that
been
will,
there, done that.
I will definitely agree with that.
Yeah, she's definitely just your Diablo Cody character.
No, she's not a Diablo Cody character.
Oh, come on. She's witty. And
yes.
She is.
You're so... You want to brush... You want to paint with that brush so widely, JC.
It's
not. That's why it sounds like it's not a kid's movie.
And that was another point I was going to make. I read it. And I was like, hey, this is a kid's movie. And then, like I was telling you before, the more I think about it, you could essentially shoot this three ways. One would be to kind of make it a little bit darker, almost an adult type film where like that chase scene might be a little bit more violent. The kids, you might age them a couple years, and you could make a pretty decent teenage, older, you know, kind of, you know, 20, 25 demographic film. Or you could basically Twilight the hell out of it, make it a tweener film.
Yeah.
By essentially keeping it the way it is, but really playing on the cheap romance between Rootbeer and, hell, I forget his name. What is his name? Fuck it. Doesn't matter. But you could, and you could make it like one of those, tweener films. And then if you really dumbed it down, you could make a Disney film out of this.
Yeah.
It is essentially, and then I was like, damn. Alan Loeb's fucking genius. That is the most sellable script. So you could, depending on the director and maybe just one just wash over rewrite, you could essentially just like pick what demographic you want to sell this story to, because it is very, I mean, it's somewhat original. I mean, it's the essential fish out of water story, and but the idea where, like, you know, she's pregnant on the way to Mars, it's something you have not really seen, so it's looking at it a new way, which essentially in Hollywood that's as new as you're gonna get.
Which, thank God, they added that towards the end of the script where the guy knew she was pregnant before she left. Because the whole time up to that, I was reading it, I was like, how did she not get tested? And like,
yeah,
you know?
That the
I was right there too. Yeah,
and depending on it, how that character is portrayed, the NASA and White House liaison guy,
yeah,
will be your tone of your screenplay or the finished film. If he's cheesy, he's your kid's movie. If he's just kind of blah, he's your tweener movie. But if he's a hardcore asshole, then that's where your adult film. He is, you know, essentially the bad guy, and the heart of that film is going to be how he's portrayed.
What do you think it would work best as?
A Disney film.
Okay.
I think it should go into a War Games type of movie. I mean, that makes the most sense. Make the chick normal, root beer, you know, like Jennifer, the way Ally Sheedy portrayed her character in that War Games movie. I mean, that seems like the most logical way to make this movie. I mean, you make them like 18, whatever.
But didn't Disney actually produce that film?
I have no idea.
I don't know either.
Yeah, but I can see that like a modern day version of that. Because, I mean, hell, other than, you know, the surroundings, it's the same film.
Oh yeah,
it really is.
Yeah, it totally is.
And that's why he can sell this, because all he did was make it where the first half takes place on Mars, and I mean, then he can bring that kid back to Earth to
That's what I was gonna mention. The fucking monkey. That makes it such a children's film.
It is. It's just like Rocket Man all
over
again. Yeah,
I forgot about the monkey, and you gotta get rid of that thing. Nothing screams cheap to me than throwing a monkey in a screenplay.
And it's not like you couldn't put another human character there.
You could have a fucking dog.
The exact same thing. Yeah. Or a dog.
A monkey.
Or, I mean,
I know
Sam
that they
Rockwell.
Send monkeys to space. I know. But fuck.
This seems to be a little... Dear God.
Yeah, and I forgot about that. I was going to make sure to bring that up.
That is a little hokey, yes.
Yes, that's the perfect word. That is a little hokey. But if that's what he's going for, if he's going for that, you know, 7 to 14 demographic, that's bread and butter right there. I mean, they're both what, 15 years old, the guy, the boy and girl. Then that's what he wants. Then he's, well, I mean, it's Alan Loeb. He really knows what he's doing. And I don't know.
Maybe it is. I mean, like I said, there is zero to no information on this screenplay online. I'm assuming he was hired to write it, but at the same time, I can't find anything. I have no idea. Did you dig up anything on it, David?
No, I still haven't found anything on it. It's not even on his list of things that he's coming up.
Are we 100% sure that he actually wrote it?
Yeah. Very reliable source.
That's pretty fucked up that he didn't.
Well, I say that, you know, half joking, but it is very... It's not like an Alan Loeb script. He deals with adult relationships, not necessarily in like a very graphic way. They're all light in their own romantic way.
What you talking about? His other scripts?
His other scripts. I mean,
I mean, except for Things We Lost in the Fire, obviously.
Yeah.
Oh, he wrote that?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. See, I've never seen any of that. Yeah. So I have no idea what you guys are going at. Like, what does a typical Alan Loeb script look like?
It's like a very lighthearted rom-com. He wrote Baster, which is the Jennifer Aniston, Jason Bateman rom-com. He's got another Vince Vaughn pin script. And then he's got Adam Sandler movie. And then he has one called, like, The Pretend Wife. And it I can't even remember what it's about. Something about a woman has to pretend to be a guy's wife, or a guy has to hire a woman to be his wife.
And how many times have we seen that movie?
Oh, yeah. That's what I mean. It's all... A lot of his comedy scripts that he sells are just kind of like slight tinkerings to a model that's already been formed.
But he writes really well. He does. He's an economical writer, and that is something that I believe can be taught. I mean, that's not just a gift. I mean, he is not blowing my mind with his writing skill as far as, you know, his creativity. But I enjoy his scripts because he's so great of a technical writer. And that is why that man sleeps on a pile of money every night, because he can just go to – he can pitch a screenplay or get – and that's why he keeps on being hired. I don't know which are specs and which are hires.
I don't either.
But you're just like, well, Alan Loeb will write that.
Yeah. I mean, he seems to be the go-to guy right now. He's got Wall Street 2 coming out, too.
And that, I would assume, is going to be a little bit lighter.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Wall Street 2. Yeah, Alan Loeb wrote Wall Street 2.
Okay.
Money Never Sleeps.
I know the subtitle.
Yes.
obviously didn't spec that one, so they were like, no, Alan Loeb could do it.
Exactly. I mean, the guy has everything, and I was actually curious, like, does this guy just, do people hire him, like, you know, one a week or something? And, like, we have scripts from him dated June of 09, November of 09, and I think there's one from October of 09. So he is just cranking these out for people left and right.
He's a script machine.
Are they specs, though, or are they just...
See, that's
doctored?
What we were discussing. I mean, Wall Street obviously is not going to be
a spec.
I think...
Things We Lost in the Fire was his, like, a spec that got him on the blacklist, and then Only Living Boy in New York was, like, his... what he considers his, like, prized possession spec.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, good, because I think it's his best one.
Yeah. Like, those two are the ones that got him his name, and now it seems like everything is work for hire, and... There's an interview with him online where someone asked him if he went from taking, like, the number 9 bus to driving a BMW overnight, and he's like, that's exactly what happened to me.
God damn him.
So, I'm not sure what he specs anymore. Obviously, the Vince Vaughn project, Ron Howard's producing, and he was hired to write that. The Pretend Wife, I'm sure he was hired to write that. And
yeah, I'm pretty sure he was just hired to write this.
Yeah, and like I said, I know one of the Richard Lewis's was producing, so I'm sure that's who paid him to write this, too. There's just very little information on it right now.
But, I mean, we can talk about how it came to be, you know, pretty much all night, but what do you give it? Like, seeing, if you were to think of it as a children's script, what do you think of it? I don't read very many children's scripts, so JC, what do you think?
For a kids movie, it's good. I would rather it not be a kids movie. It works out best that way. This is definitely one of those things where, seeing as a finished product, and if it was made into a kids movie, I would hate it. Like, this is a script that you would give to Robert Rodriguez and tell him to make it horrible. Say, Spy.
You don't have to tell him to make things horrible.
No.
Oh.
Say, turn this into Spy Kids or Shorts or whatever the crap his latest movie, kids movie is. Sky High. I don't even know what crap kids movie he's making now, but this is definitely one of those scripts where you can say, here, Robert Rodriguez, take this to your backyard lot and hire all your family to play in it again and go to town.
But
as a movie, no. I don't think it would work as well as it does reading it.
No, I understand. So what were you thinking, sir?
Me?
Yes, sorry. I should have used proper nouns.
You're still, I'm dead.
In its current form, like, if this script was made today, I wouldn't probably like it very much. Just because there's, like, so much crap in it, like, that was just bothering me on a second read. Like, you guys were talking about the bad guy of the film. He's a very shoddy bad guy. Why does he give her the whole entire water station that she wants just so... And he even knows she's not telling the truth. So why doesn't he just, like, release them? It's like leaps in logic that just piss me off when I read
certain
things.
See, I didn't even
things.
Think about that. I mean, I read it once and I kind of went over it again for today, but I didn't even think about that. I don't know. I think if you break down any kind of intricate, especially the way he weaves plot lines, you're going to find leaps in logic like that. And I think, you know, a 12-year-old watching this is not going to care. No. But I can understand where you're coming from because probably like me, you read it the first time just, you know, just like a regular script. You weren't thinking, oh shit, this is a kid's movie. This is a Disney film.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we essentially read it because it was an Alan Loeb script and, you know, we're looking, you know, just like, well, how does the action, you know, set up the scene? And is the dialogue, you know, showing just what it needs to? And then you realize, oh, fuck, this is a Disney film.
Well, it kind of came out as a Disney film. I was thinking Disney the moment I saw the monkey, you know, yeah, and just... Yeah. It was going that way from the beginning, but it's still just certain things don't have to be ridiculously stupid. Like the kid, they know his heart's going out. So wouldn't they be like on the lookout for like hospitals and stuff? Because eventually he's going to fall down. It just seems like they could have made the bad guy a little more smarter. It seems like he's always this, you know, this guy always behind. Even in the end, like the van switch or something happens, like I'm still not sure how that worked out, where he just got up and she punches him and then they get on his plane and fly away.
I mean that's it just goes back to you just gotta let that stuff go because it's, you know, he's like, it's a kid's movie, you know.
But you could do it better though. That's what I'm saying. All you had to do is cut some scenes. And then there's her husband, the chicks on, I can't remember her name, but her husband or ex-husband that she gets on a plane to go see,
yeah,
and because he has the kid's name. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't Bass have the kid's name, the guy that's still left at Mars? Why didn't she get it out of him? I mean, that'd be a little better than having this
shit,
this one character
this
for this one purpose.
Down. You are just taking it out back and just shooting it between the eyes, aren't you?
You hate this through the bullshit, man.
Yeah, he does.
Right through it.
Yeah, he's the logic lawyer. You make all good points. And my only defense, which I don't even know why I'm defending it, is it's just as it's a kid's movie. And I think it might be an early pass at a kid's movie.
Oh, I'm sure it's first draft, yeah.
Yeah.
But well, that's what it feels like, probably. I mean, there's so much shit tossed in here for no reason whatsoever.
I can tell you this much. The scenes up in space... I started to get really bored with.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't really start digging the screenplay until he got to Earth and met the girl.
And if he's going to be such a fish out of water, there has to be some more funny with that. Like he's just like, what's ice cream? You know, there's going to be more.
Yeah, it's all it is an argument between him and her. I'm from Mars. No, you're not. You're full of shit.
And maybe that's what passes for funny on the Disney Channel these days. But, if you're going to have that, you have really good opportunities to make some funny scenes in between him, you know, coughing up blood and some shit. So, you know, there's some opportunities lost there, but it could be just a first pass. Like, these could be placeholders. So,
I don't mean to jump in here, but that was another thing that pissed me off was him dying almost every other time.
He was
felt like I was watching Lord of the Rings again. It's just fucking stupid.
That is true. That kid I thought was dead like four individual times in the screenplay.
Yeah.
Eventually, I just want him to fucking die after some period of time. Just
you hate the screenplay. What are you
talking
about?
I just do not like certain things. I actually like the screenplay. Like I thought there's some good moments between Rubier and Gardner.
You don't like.
That's the kid's name. I mean, they had some good moments, like him and his jokes, whatever. I mean, you know, I didn't mind that. And then his question, "What's your favorite thing on Earth?" I thought that was a nice touch. But I mean, yeah, just stupid leaps of logic. Just, I don't know, piss me off for obscene reasons.
No. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be one of the most simplistic setups of it's a fish out of water and a road film.
Yeah.
Just smashed right the fuck together.
It is.
So,
with semi trucks.
What'd you say?
With semi trucks. They're always getting hit by a semi truck or about to get hit.
Yeah.
Do you guys not remember that?
No.
If you guys read it again, you'll see it. You'll be like, David's fucking right. Just some stupid shit going on in this movie.
You're a 12-year-old. What do you think of this, if it's a movie?
I don't know. Like, JC brought up the Rocketeer or whatever. Is it the Rocketeer or Rocket Man?
Rocket Man. Those are very, very different films.
Both Disney movies, both very different, though.
Rocket Man, that's the one where he like farts in a suit, whatever.
That's what everybody remembers.
Yes. See, yeah. And he has his little. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. See, I laughed at that as a kid, you know?
Well, I
know
still laugh at it, so don't feel bad.
So, okay. There you go. I mean, I'm not saying. I mean, this is not nearly
I don't
as
want it to
stupid.
Be a kid's movie, though. I think it'd be so much better as more of an adult film, like a teenage film.
I do, too.
And you might be right. And the whoever's producing this might. You know, kind of be like, no, we want this little edgier, a little darker. And I'm sure Alan Loeb's perfectly capable of that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, this, like we said, we don't know what past this is. I mean, you couldn't find anything about the production, JC. So that should say something. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that everything of Alan Loeb is in production right now. Yeah. So maybe we're just kind of taking this is a breather. But I feel like I've sat here and kind of defended it for the past, you know, whole time. Because I look at myself as a 12, 13-year-old, not currently, but I can imagine myself as such. And I think this would be the type of the movie I would enjoy, kind of adventure story, but it has a little romance to it. I mean, I think I would have liked it as a kid. So I think that's the only reason why I'm just sitting here saying, well, you know, you gotta take it into account. You know, this is why this might be funny. So it has its flaws just like anything else. Technically, well written. If this is a first draft, it's one of the first drafts that I've read of somebody where I think only one time did I see a small technical error in writing.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember what it is now. I think he had an extra R in somebody's name. And I was like, well, okay, come on. So... Alan Loeb will remain to be he's like the Cal Ripken Jr. Of screenwriters. He's
like
just
Iron Man.
He's fucking consistent, man. He doesn't hit home runs, but he'll hit enough, you know, singles to keep him in the game.
Exactly.
So that I'll just end it on that poor baseball analogy.
No, I agree. He is a very good writer. Like JC said, when you first read it, you didn't really want to put it down. It's a very breezy screenplay. And he's also very good at visual storytelling, too, which some writers now suck at.
Well, yeah. I mean, they just overdo it. They fucking overkill in the actions. And he just knows how to transition between setup, the slug line, the action, and the dialogue just perfectly. And when you ever read, like, his more New York romance kind of films, the action lines are so small, but just that's all you need. So economical is the perfect word for that. So, okay. Looking at it, I used to give these screenplays a ranking from 1 to 10. I give it like a 6.
I would give it a 7.
Okay, see? You liked it even more.
On first read, it's so solid.
Okay.
I mean, you can sit and break it down, but if you're a reader reading the screenplay, you might fall in love with it. And I mean, that's exactly how Alan Loeb can write a screenplay, though.
Yeah.
And it might identify with somebody differently than it does someone else. What about you, David?
I give it a 6.5. Just to be in the middle.
You're just fucking hedging your bets right now. Yeah.
No, he made me, he duped me first time through, but second time through, not so great. But I agree. Someone reading this for the first time would just not complain about it at all.
Exactly. Okay.
All right.
All right. Let's, thanks for joining us as always, David.
Yeah, it was good. Let me rant a little bit.
Blew right through that. It's good work.
Yep. And you can find us on Twitter at PDF Screenplays. As always, thanks for listening, and goodbye.
Have a good one.
Later.